Well, good morning, and welcome to our session today. Implementing organizational QI starts with a plan. Presenters today are Sonia Armbruster, who is with Sedgwick County Health Department. Sonia has served a number of administrative roles, including program and policy development, health promotion, and community assessment. And previously, she worked with the University of Kansas School of Medicine in Wichita. Kane serves as the agency accreditation coordinator and QI project manager. Previously, he was a surveyor at the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. And I'm Jack Moran. I'm with the Public Health Foundation. We welcome you to our session today. So these are our disclosures. And anybody have any questions on that? So we will begin the presentation. Here's our objectives for the day. We want to define and discuss a QI plan and describe how it works. I was very fortunate early on to have a chance to work with both Ty and Sonia on developing this QI plan, which was probably one of the most copied in the by different agencies and state and local health departments, because they were one of the first ones out there with it. We're going to outline a QI roadmap and identify your current location. We're going to ask you to get up and put where you are on the roadmap. We want to talk a little bit about change management, identify and overcome some organizational inhibitors that help you move from one phase to the next in this case. We want to talk a little bit about quality assessment and what the framework that we'll provide to talk about that, and then understand the relationship between QI and performance management, and we'll have a model we'll discuss there. I'm going to do a short introduction to the QI and public health. And again, why are we doing QI in public health? I guess everybody sort of knows that today. It's the foundation of the new accreditation program. Again, we have an investment in public health, and we want to make sure that we get better all the time and improve and be good stewards of that investment. The definition of quality improvement in public health, I'm sure many of you have seen this before, but again, what we talk about is that we want to make sure that we use a deliberate and defined improvement process, something like Plan, Do, Check, Act, the Plan, Do, Study Act, really want to focus on activities that we improve that are responsive to the community needs and improve the population health. And again, we always talk about in the definition that it's not a one-time event, it's a continuous type of thing to achieve measurable improvements in the organization that will really help us achieve equity and improve the health of our community. So again, this is our definition that we are following in public health. Again, we use the Deming model, Plan, Do, Check, or Plan, Do, Study Act, whichever one you follow in this case. And again, it's a simple, straightforward model, but it has a number of steps in it. And we always talk to people about, you know, the fact that people like to go from plan to do in about 30 seconds. And again, what we want to do is make sure everybody thinks about the fact that there's 8 steps in plan. Really what we want to do in this case is make sure we identify and prioritize the opportunities so that we focus on those that have the biggest impact. Develop really good aim statements, and I think people have discussed aim statements enough that we know that people, we want to make sure that they're very discrete, measurable, and time-bound, and that they're not overwhelming like world peace, that we want to solve world hunger and things like that. Again, focusing on the current process, what do we do, how do we do it, what's the measures of that, so we have a baseline so we know where we're starting from. So when we do make improvements, we understand what the impact of the improvement is. Again, making sure that we collect data on the current process, identify all the possible causes, look at solutions in this case, develop an improvement theory so that when we implement this in the do stage of the pilot test, that we have an improvement theory that we said that's going to improve X, and we want to see if it really does that. Then develop an action plan to implement it. And do in this case is we implement the improvement, monitor it, collect data, and then any lessons learned, and then we want to do is the check study phase to see how did it really perform, and then act to either adopt it and standardize it, go back to do and maybe adapt it, or perhaps we have to abandon it. And in most cases, if we have followed this model fairly closely, we very seldom abandon it at the end. We usually either adapt it or adopt it in this case. So, turn this over.
Good morning, I'm Ty Kane with the Sedgwick County Health Department. In just a minute, Sonny's going to come up and just give a little background on Sedgwick County and where we are. Just before we get started, though, we do want this to be a somewhat interactive session. Hopefully you guys are awake enough at this point. Is anybody a West Coaster? So exactly how early is it out there now?
3 hours,
so 5:30 a.m. I can't get excited sometimes about QI in the afternoon. So at 5:30 in the morning, I want like powdered sugar donuts and coffee with cream. So not to talk about QI. So I applaud you for your effort to get here this morning on time, and ties look straight and hair's combed. So nice job with that. So we are going to talk. I'm going to cover the QI roadmap, which is a project that NACHO has worked hard to develop, and Pooja Verma is here today sitting up front, and she's really managed the development of this, the facilitation and coordination of bringing some people together to think about it and develop the tool. Who's heard of the QI roadmap? Okay, a couple of you. And have you seen it on through like a mail or an email or on NACHO's website? Okay, great. So really developed over the last year or so, you know, between NACHO staff and then a few work groups that they coordinate. And so I think it's a great tool for me just really to conceptualize QI in an organization and understand the development of QI, the QI culture. So Sonny's going to talk for just a minute.
Just to get a sense for where we are in the world, our health department is in Sedgwick County, Kansas, which is right there in the center of the country. And when you want to know how big our community is compared to others, Wichita has about 370,000 people. We talk about having a little over 600,000 in the metro area. And these are some of the iconic looks from our community. The Keeper of the Plains is that giant Indian statue in the middle of at the confluence of two rivers. One of our points of pride is 47% of all general aviation in the whole world is built in Wichita, Kansas. So we are the air capital of the world, and that's kind of where most of our folks work. Our county that we serve is 498,000 residents, which made us just a little less than 2,000 shy of being able to apply for a community transformation grant. So that was an important marker for us. Kansas has a decentralized local public health system, so we work with the state but not for the state. And we have about 160 full-time staff, although right now it's more like about 145 in a hiring freeze. Many of you may be experiencing similar things. And we function in four divisions, and we provide just about 20 programs, so pretty much every public health program. And that's basically who we are. I'm going to go ahead and start with that.
Alrighty. So for those who just walked in, I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're going to try to be somewhat interactive. One thing to think about now, I'm going to go into the different phases of the roadmap, the six different phases. And be thinking about, you know, based on what you see on these posters around here right now that talk about phases 1 through 6, and thinking about the slides that I'm going to show, where you think your organization might fit. And what we're going to do shortly after is have you write down the name of your agency on one of these note cards, and then in a few minutes we'll ask you to post them up here on these boards, and then we'll do some things related to that shortly after. So just as a bit more of just a introduction, tell you about, you know, why Sedgwick County is involved in QI, kind of where we've been. I wanted to go through this Gantt chart with you. Back in 2008, our director dedicated half of a full-time position to essentially quality improvement and accreditation preparation. And so that was my position. Sonny's my supervisor, so she's worked hand-in-hand with me on all of that. So that takes us, you know, back to 2008. Shortly after, we did a FAB vetting session. How many took part in the vetting session for the FAB standards back in 2009? Okay. When they released their initial draft standards, they sent a request out for folks to essentially go through the standards measure by measure and provide feedback. And so we did that. In doing the vetting session, it was kind of a dual purpose. One, we provided feedback to FAB, let them know what we thought was strong and weak. But at the same time, we did an agency self-assessment. So we identified how prepared we were for accreditation through that vetting session. And one glaring weakness that we identified was in quality improvement. actually at that meeting, I can remember people, you know, shuffling through on their iPods and whatnot, trying to find a definition of QI. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody knew what it meant to document it. Nobody knew what a model for QI was. And so that's kind of where we are, where we were in mid-2009. And so we looked for some opportunities for funding within our state so that we could train leadership staff and build some capacity for QI. And so you see on the chart about November 2009, we wrote and then received some funding. And things kind of snowballed from there. The grant essentially was to train staff, develop a QI plan and policy, and work with a consultant to carry out actual QI projects. And so during this training, we carried out 8 QI projects that were led by staff. Each had their own project manager. Each had their own, we'd call it a topic area expert. So if the project manager, the person skilled with organizing and scheduling and coordinating, wasn't necessarily the topic expert, we would always have a topic expert on board and then team members just to walk through the process. So those were the goals there. In March 2010, we had our first Q-team meeting. At that point, we began drafting our quality improvement plan. That was and has been the main role of the Q-team to this point. And then on through 2010 and 2011, we did the leadership QI training, and that culminated with an all-staff QI training. And so just to kind of give you an overview of what that looked like, for the leadership, we had two webinars with Jack, who we hired as our consultant from the Public Health Foundation. So did those webinars. Jack would call in. We'd have 40 of our staff in a room, and it was somewhat interactive. The first was kind of an introduction to QI principles and tools. The second was a bit more applied. We actually did some hands-on stuff, started working in our groups. And then for a period of about 3 or 4 months, those teams worked on their projects. So those 8 teams worked on their QI projects. We had opportunities to communicate with Jack over the phone so the QI project managers could work with him, bounce their aim statements off of him, talk about their measurement plan, things like that. And so in January of 2011 then, so almost a year ago, was the all-staff meeting. And so the QI project teams presented their storyboards to all staff at that point, and Jack flew down to Wichita, which was a treat for him, let me tell you. And probably the most glamorous stop you've ever had. And so he presented intro to QI to all staff, about 140 of us, and you know everybody got to see the storyboard. So it was a neat deal. The projects had gone on for 3 to 4 months, and over that time, all staff were involved at some level. So there might have been a survey that went out, or they might have been part of kind of a focus group, or somebody might have asked them more questions than they were comfortable answering about some subject. And so at this training, they kind of got to see, oh, I see what that was all about. So I think it was a neat deal for all staff. And so since then, between January and now, we've basically launched our QI plan. And I'd say a couple of key pieces of that plan, 2 goals, are intro to QI training for all staff that's facilitated by myself and Sonia and other Q team members. And then also that all staff are engaged in a QI project at the program level during the year. That's gone fairly well. I'd be happy to talk to you all more about that later. And so what we're doing now is kind of taking a look at what we did right and what we did wrong in 2011, and we're starting to draft our 2012 QI plan. So that's just kind of a background on where we have been with QI. At this point, are there any questions? Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Sure. Yeah, we went back and forth on that, and actually I think the need that we identified during during our vetting session was obviously the lack of QI. The focus at that point was lack of QI knowledge and training at the leadership level, and so it was just kind of our method that we would train leadership staff first, then that they could, as their QI projects went on, they could bring in staff as needed and kind of train them as they went, knowing all along that we'd, do the all-staff training and at the end of the project. Yeah, definitely could have gone either way. There's a lot of talk about, top-down or bottom-up QI, how should that work? I think that it's worked for us, both ways at different times, but, we try to Our Q team is represented by staff from all levels, you know, frontline staff up to the director, and projects are led by staff generally. So, yeah. Does that answer your question? Okay, sure. Any other questions? Okay. So we'll move on to the roadmap. Sonia's going to hand out some post-its now. So there are some extra Sharpies around if you need a Sharpie or a pen. But like I said, be thinking as we go through these about where your agency is on this roadmap. Pooja's contact information is up there. If you have any requests for this material or would like to see any slides or would like to offer her any suggestions, you're welcome to contact her or talk to her after the session. I imagine she'd be available for that. So this is just kind of an overview. So you can look at the slides, look at the posters around the room, but this is going to essentially provide you an overview of the six phases. So the first phase is no knowledge of QI. I'll get into more detail in a minute. Second stop then is not involved in QI activities. Third stop is you've got some informal or ad hoc QI activities going on. And then the fourth phase, some formal QI, followed by formal agency-wide QI, and then your QI culture. So we're going to get into some detail on these now, but this slide is just to provide the general overview. So no knowledge of QI. This is certainly where I would say our agency was in late 2008, 2009. People just weren't really aware of it. We lacked awareness. We didn't understand even basic principles of QI. Other characteristics are that you tend to be overwhelmed with other issues, so you just don't make time for QI. You don't think about it. And then also, obviously, because you don't know about it, you don't understand it, you don't value its importance in your public health practice. So some ideas for transition, how do you move from no knowledge to the next phase? Well, somebody's got to hear about it. You've got to be prompted in some way. Maybe you're at a conference. Maybe you got an email that talked about it, and it encourages you to learn more. So strategies for transition, bring your leadership on board. At least make them aware of what you know. Ask for support. Maybe try to find resources for a leadership or staff training. And, put the right leaders in place. So the people that support QI, buy into QI, give them a position of authority almost where they can provide some training to all staff, be in a position to where they can guide other staff, bring them up to where they are. So that's the first phase. Phase two, not involved with QI activities. So you're starting to embrace QI and understand it. Maybe you've been on PHF's website or NACHO's website and you've watched a webinar. Maybe you've bought a book. Maybe you've got a public health memory jogger now and you're starting to thumb through there. Maybe starting to think about using the tools. Other characteristics, you still got an idea that staff aren't really involved in the improvement process. So you see staff maybe as just the folks doing the work, but not engaged in the improvement process. And then thinking about data is just either not available or it's not used. So with quality improvement, when you're at phases further on down the road, it's really driven a lot by data. So here early on, data just doesn't mean much to the organization. So how do you transition? How do you move forward? Things like mentorship. So maybe by this point you've got a couple of people who understand QI a little bit and understand the importance of it. So you start to have them mentor a few other people. Maybe you start to run a QI project, bring some other people on board. You start to maybe raise up the people who you view as problem solvers and not firefighters. So problem solvers being the people who identify a problem and strategically try to find a solution or try to improve the process. Firefighters being the people who just want it to go away, don't address it. And three, informal or ad hoc QI activities. This is where you might have some pretty good QI efforts, but they're just going on in pockets. And maybe they're not all that robust, but you're definitely using some tools correctly. You're using PDSA, you're flow charting, maybe using Gantt charts to guide a project. Strategies for transition, start to share these stories of projects organization-wide. Because by this point, you've probably done a QI project or two, maybe at the high level, a department-wide project, maybe something in a pocket, but you want to start to share that, get the word out, let people know that there are QI leaders in the agency. start to myth bust maybe a little bit. There's a lot of preconceptions about QI, that it's always top down and it's rigid and it's more forms and documentation. And this is where you start to address some of those concerns that staff might have in order to move forward to the next level. So phase four, this is where you have formal QI activities implemented in specific areas only. This is where you might start to rely a bit more on data. So you start to understand the power of data a little bit as far as a performance measure, the importance of measuring regularly to see, to observe the quality of work that you're doing. You start to see people as more critical to success. So staff are no longer viewed as hired hands. They're viewed as, you know, part of the process. They're assets to improving the project, and they actually have value in improving the process. QI may start to be part of the job. So some of your documents might make it into kind of a formal communication structure. Maybe there's now kind of a general rule that you all, when you launch a new project, you use a Gantt chart so that everybody on the team understands the key steps of the project and the key parts on the timeline, things like that. Also, you might have in-house QI resources available. So you might have a coordinator part-time. You might have a library available for staff so that they can access QI resources. And so strategies for transition here, you might start to see things like maybe a QI plan, maybe talk about a QI plan, all the way up to you've got a comprehensive QI plan developed. You start to see working across silos, so you might see a human resources project that touches all of your divisions, and so you're working across the organization, bringing in directors from all levels to improve a process. That might not sound like a big deal, but to actually do that, that means that you would have four people from each division who understand QI enough and buy into it enough that they will all invest in a project and understand the benefit of it, it's hard to get to that point. And so exit five, formal agency-wide QI. So you're relying more on data. You definitely see the value. Some of your QI work might be tied to performance measures and standards. There's just more of a focus on data. You definitely have a QI plan. It's more visible. You might present storyboards at meetings, weekly, monthly, quarterly. You have a QI policy in place. You just start to see it more. There's more of an atmosphere of improvement, more of a learning environment. You start to see fewer firefighters, the people who just want problems to go away, and more people that are problem solvers. And they show that they're problem solvers by initiating QI processes, bringing up, you know, the use of tools in meetings, things of that nature. So strategies for transition, how do you move on? You know, make it part of the process. You know, make sure that your meeting agendas have QI language on them. Make sure that your project planning documents have QI language on them. Make sure, you know, in every meeting maybe you get an update from your staff about, you know, where are you with your QI projects? Do you have any ideas for improving some processes? And then also you might see, you know, you might have QI technical assistance available in one area, but you might also start to see program managers or supervisors as mentors for their staff. And then last, the QI culture, which is what we're all striving for. And if anybody in the room is at this level, you should probably come up here and finish the presentation because I want to hear what's going on. But I think, you know, one comment that was collected from NACHO's work is that problems are gold. So that's kind of the opposite of the firefighter perspective. For the firefighter mentality, you know, they just want the thing to go away. They want to put out the fire, move on to the next thing. It's like whack-a-mole. You know, when a problem comes up, you smack it, and then another one comes up, you smack that one. But at this level, problems are gold because people see it as an opportunity to, you know, save money, improve morale, you know, address a problem, really get down to the root of it and fix the problem for good and understand the problem, understand what they've been doing wrong. So that's, to me, that's probably the most important piece there. Again, just another point, you see a lot more champions of QI throughout the organization. So your Q team might start to really take on a leadership role. Your director is a leader of leaders, you know, displaying QI at meetings and things like that. And so You know, since you're at the culture level now, can't really talk about transition to the next level. So sustainability, something we can talk about here. How do you sustain that culture? Definitely have to have a leadership commitment, a balanced approach. You still have to get the work done, you know, so don't lose track of that. But you do want to make sure that you're focusing on the big picture as well. Communication, make sure that, you know, QI language is presented through newsletters and meetings. Just maintain that culture where people talk about it, market it, you know. And then just keep in mind that regression is always easier than progression. So those are the six phases on the continuum. And again, if you need just some more, you know, a description of what each one entails, you can look around at these posters. But hopefully by now you've recognized where your agency is, and turn it over to Sonia and she'll tell you what we're going to do next.
So we build this as a workshop. So if you're hoping to stay comfortable, that would not be very workshop-like. So we'll probably even work on turning the lights up a little bit in here. But do you have any questions about the six phases that you'd want to direct to Ty before we get up and wiggle? Yes, Mary.
In terms of the strategies for transition, where do you see the role of, say, the health director versus someone like yourself in implementing certain strategies? I mean, are there strategies that you say, oh, a health director, that's really what a health director should do versus strategies that mm-hmm. someone like your position
should do? Yeah. I can answer. I'd invite Pooja or Jack or Sonia to answer as well. And again, just to reiterate, the roadmap's not Sedgwick County's work, you know, it's NACHO's work, and they've collected this data from health departments and professionals across the country and from consultants as well. So it's really a snapshot of characteristics of these phases and strategies for transition from all these folks. Our experience has been that it just takes a leader. I mean, it takes somebody to make it an issue in the department. So whether it's a staff-level person bringing it up to the director and asking for support and just pushing and pushing, or the director taking ownership, I think either way, it's all about building that culture. So whether it's driven by the staff or driven by the director, I think that's the key. Have anything to add?
I think that's an excellent question to ask. I would just add that I think our director does a really good job of embracing the concept that leadership is an activity, not a position, as evidenced by the fact that two of us are here to tell about what we're doing at our department and not her. And she would gladly come and talk about quality improvement anytime, but really encourages that kind of work. And one advantage to having Ty be the person who people go to with their questions about quality improvement projects is, one, he's way more available than the director because she has a lot of other responsibilities that drive her time, like commissioners, county commissioners asking questions and whatnot. And just organizationally, if I'm the check-in, check-out person in our TB clinic who's discovered a problem that she'd like to address, she's going to tell Ty how confused and frustrated she is with quality improvement, but she's not going to tell the director that this is a process that's scary for her. So for us, it's working really well, I think, to have a lot of support from the director, but to have some guidance and leadership from within the staff. So, Jack, you look like you had a thought.
I can just go back to when they did the kickoff. Was a question about the training. I did the training over the phone, and then I would hear all this laughter, and then Ty and Tanya would come back and say, okay, we're ready to move on. And then there'd be all this laughter, and then I'd hear them come back and say, we're ready to move on. And when we had the kickoff, the nice thing was about it with all staff training was you could talk about QI, and then everybody get up and walk into the other part of the building, and there it was. All the storyboards are up, things have been done. So that way, I think it made it more real for the people that we just talked about. Now you can see how it's being done in Sedgwick County. And I think as far as the leadership went, it wasn't a question that day when the director kicked it off that she wasn't 100% committed to it. And it wasn't a one-time event. It was going to be around for a while. And I think that was a key part of it. And I think the kickoff went very well, which you guys orchestrated, and it's sustaining it.
Thanks. I saw a question over here.
I think in Exit 4, you had joined ASQ. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you thought that was a worthwhile in what you're talking about, because they're not that oriented to public health.
Sure. Yeah. I'll give a brief answer there. Sonia and I joined about a year ago, just as part of that culture, you know, just having those newsletters, having that support, and Wichita, Sonia talked about a lot of manufacturing. So ASQ in our community, our section is really geared toward that community. So that hasn't really been applicable. What has been important, and some of these resources are free on their website anyway, is just some of their training modules. There is some training that you can access as a member only, but there's stuff out there, you know, for everybody. ASQ has different certifications. I don't know how many, 15 to 25 probably, ranging from like your lean and your black belt stuff all the way down to just a certified quality manager for a work site. And so it gives you, the important thing, at least for me, was to understand what they value as, you know, this is what you need to be focusing on. These are the things you need to be studying to achieve this certification. So it's been a nice guide. So yeah, that's a good question. American Society for Quality, ASQ.org. You can find their website.
I had a comment about the ASQ. It's not necessarily just ASQ or just being a member of any sort of quality organization, like whether it be ASQ or IHI, just having access to those types of resources. So that might be somewhere where we might need to tweak the roadmap so it's a little broader than just ASQ.
I'm formerly the chair of the Quality Management Division of ASQ. And if you go to the Quality Management Division section of the American Society of Quality, you'll look under there. There is a Public Health Technical Committee that Grace Duffy and I started. And we've been populating it with articles and books and things like that. So there's another resource. I think between NATRO, PHF, ASTO, ASQ, you probably have the whole body of literature.
Okay, so now we're getting ready to do the moving around. So you have a post-it note, and there's one on the back table if we're coming in, and there's some Sharpies around. And what we're going to ask you to do is write the name of your agency or whoever you work for. And the challenge here is to determine where on this on these six X's do you find your department. Are you at the no knowledge of quality improvement, just as a quick review, not involved? Yeah, thanks. Not involved in quality improvement activities, have an informal or ad hoc QI activities, find yourselves with some formal quality improvement activities, like where there are plans and everyone knows that when you kick them off you have some things written down, that you have an agency-wide policy and plan, or that you've achieved the pinnacle culture piece for your department. And so what we're going to do is do some working groups based on where you find yourselves. So you're going to physically move now, which I know is really weird when you go to a breakout session at APHA, but we're going to ask you to do some actual movement. So take the post-it, and please take it to the poster that in the room that best describes where you believe your agency to be now. So, and then I'll give you some more instructions. So ready, set, go.
You might want to stay there.
Yeah, and go to the poster and stay there for a moment. As opposed to numbering off to working groups, we're going to see where we are. So stay at the poster. Once you get your name tag placed, in moments we should have everyone near a poster. So stay with the poster so we can see where we are. Okay, this is excellent. So Jack is going to lead some activities in a few minutes with you. We're going to have, this actually works out great. We're going to have a group in phase one, and I'd like you to try to pull yourselves together near the front right here. Phase one, so near where Pooja's sitting, and so move your things to that spot. And phase two, right up there by the projector, if you want to move your things to right that chair or that set of chairs, that'd be great. Phase three, back in the corner. Phase four, at the back over here, and phase five, off to the right over here. So you have a minute to move yourselves back into a group, and then we have some questions for discussion. So be brave. Thanks.
Can you take some payment out now?
tell them a minute for them.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Didn't intend to make phase one a front row deal, but the chairs in the room are wonky. There's more chairs on this side, so welcome to the front row. All right, you're doing, go ahead and have a seat, phase four and all the phases. What we'd like you to do is discuss a couple of things, because, you know, we're really selfish, and we really were hoping to learn from all of you about this, where you are and how we can help make what we're doing better and how all of us together as a system can make quality improvement make more sense. And so we'd like you to think about two questions to start your mental energy running, and then Jack's going to take us through a quality improvement exercise. I'm going to ask you to think about two questions. One, what activities have you done related to the roadmap so far? So there are some suggestions about what you might do, like you might do some training, or you might take some, you might create a plan, or you might start going to lectures like this, or something like that. So what activities have you already done that you saw on the roadmap that were useful to you, that might be useful to your peers who are sitting with you? And then the second question is, what resources do you think you're going to need to move to the next phase? So what resources have you used that have been useful, and what resources would help you move to the next phase? And I just want you to think about that for about 2 minutes. So a brief conversation with the people that you're sitting near. Ready, set, go. It's really painful to interrupt this robust discussion that you all are having, but I promise we're going to put you right back into discussion. So I'm going to call you back out. Any ahas you'd like to raise from this discussion with your peers so far about resources that you felt were excellent and resources that you'd like to see?
Well, for me, I would like to see how you all had the training from 2008 up until now with the strategic plan. That is something that I would take back, as we actually, we talk about that, or you may have one person that has the plan, but I'm asking, how did you get these objectives without the entire CQI committee? So this is something
gotcha.
I would like.
And we're going to talk about the elements of the plan after we do this next couple of exercises, and I think we'll be able to illustrate even further how that training piece worked for us. So that's good, a training resource and a strategy for getting folks trained. And other ahas or about resources that you've seen or resources you'd like to have? All right, then I'm going to pass off to Jack, and we're going to talk about change.
What we want to do in this next pod is to, you've found the exit that you're on. Now what we want to do is get you back on the highway, get you to the next exit, so you can get off at that one. And part of the process we really want to deal with is talking about the resistance to change, because that's one of the things that happens as you go from one exit to the next in this process. And Woodrow Wilson always used to say, if you want to make a lot of enemies, just change something. And that's a quick way to do it. So one of the things I want to try is a little change exercise. Why don't you put your arms at your side. Put your arms at your side. Follow directions. Okay? How to change. Okay? So put your arms at your side and fold them the normal way you do it. Okay? Now put them down and do it the opposite way. But a little slower. You know, anytime you change anything in your life, it makes it much harder to do it. A couple of years ago, our dog, we got new dishes for the dog, and we moved them. So we pushed the water where the food used to be and the food where the water used to be. You know how many days he went over and stuck his nose into the water dish thinking it was food? We also had a three-car garage, and one time we got new cars, so we switched the garages because the cars didn't fit there. And I came home at night, and my wife did the same thing. We drove up to the old garage and pushed the remote. And the door over here went up and down. And sitting there going, what the hell's wrong with this stupid door? It's not going up. It's hard. Change is hard. You just, when you're doing this stuff, it just doesn't work that easily. So anytime you change anything and make a small change, and even in your own personal life, it's hard. You have to adjust to it. So you got to think about what people are going through when they're using QI. It's difficult to do things. So, again, change isn't linear. There's people like to plot it. You know, it's like, I'm here, I'll go to there, and this is all the steps we'll do. It isn't. Different people adapt quicker than other people in the process. And when you're doing change, you interweave a number of multiple different improvement efforts as you're going through the process. And change comes from everywhere. I have the slide here, it's top-down, bottom-up, but it also comes from both sides at the same time. And again, when any time you make an organizational change, it has a personal dimension. Everybody has something that they either gain or they lose in that change. And again, we talk about measurement. It's a good way to really measure. Did we really achieve the change we want, and then did we sustain it as we move forward? Again, why do change efforts fail? Well, no urgency, no vision, limited communications. The obstacles that were there aren't removed. We use our spare resources. I always talk about, you know, when you form quality teams, you know, don't get the people who are available. You know, they're available for a reason. You want the people who aren't available. Those are the people you really want. You know, we have old rules. There's unwritten rules in the game, you know, and that's the way we play the game. We have all these other rules, but we really go back to the old rules as we're doing this. And then there's the old style thinking, you know, everything, the way we used to do things. So we really got to make some change in all of these things. So how do we change? Well, we innovate. We come new ways of doing things. We have to get people learn how to adapt. A lot of times you have to give them skills. A lot of times we go through QI, you do the plan, do, check, study, act process. You know, it's a way to help people adapt to this new problem-solving method. You have to help people evolve. You know, as you go from one roadmap and the exit here to the next one, it's change. It's a different road. It's a different exit on the highway. There's new things that you have to do. And in those cases, you know, you have to evolve, and you've got to give people the ability to do that. The other way is you imitate. You know, and you got a good example here from Sedgwick, you know, to imitate some of the things they've done. They've been successful. They've worked where they are in this case. So one of the things over time, as you talk about, is, and if you want this whole thing, if you go up on the PHF website, there's a book called Modular Kaizen. It was funded by CDC. It's free. You can download it. It's about 150 pages, and this is in Chapter 9. And over time, one of the things I've been fortunate in my life is I've been in consulting, I've run organizations, and so I've sort of been able to, you know, learn a little bit about organizations, go into consulting and try it with other organizations, go back and run something, and maybe improve things. So over time, I sort of looked at how do I make change in organizations, whether it was in manufacturing, healthcare, or public health. And really, I found these were the four key variables: management involvement, resource commitment, how big of a change were we going to make in this case, and then what was the resistance to the change? And I came up with these four triggers as we look at them. And the first trigger was change the way we work. And this is really always making continuous improvements, small, measurable changes, gradual, you train people. You know, minor degree of change, kind of low resource commitment, kind of a low resistance, and, you know, management had to agree to it, but not too much involvement. Trigger two talks about change the way we function. Now, this comes around sometimes when you have a structural change in the organization. There may be functions we no longer need to do. A grant runs out. We end that piece of work. A key manager leaves, and we either replace them or we don't replace them, or we reorganize. So these are things where you find that, you know, there's high resource commitment because we got to get people involved in this. Still maybe minor to major change involved. The management involvement is maybe in the middle. And again, the resistance to change can be high because when people end a function, where do I go? Where do I start working in this case? And it's a hard thing for many people, but if we plan it out correctly, reorganize, it's a way to do it. Trigger three talks about change the way we interact. Sometimes this is where we get a new mission or a vision in the organization. All of a sudden, we're going to focus on the customer. We haven't done that before, something new. And what we do in this case is that we want to make these changes. And then the trigger four is really change the way we do business. And this is one of the most difficult to do. It's usually a knee-jerk reaction at times. Something major has changed in the organization, and we have to do it very quickly. And what happens is we usually shoot ourselves in the foot as we do it. And I can tell you I was involved in one of these at one time. I worked for Polaroid Corporation, and one day Roy Disney came along and tried to take the company over. This was back, we had $350 million surplus in our pension fund. And his whole thing was he wanted that money, said he was going to give it to the shareholders. So overnight we went from a company that spent money freely, no real controls, to a company that had a lot of controls. The employees bought one-third of the company overnight, and we changed the way we did business. And what happened was the day Roy Disney went away, made his money, didn't get take over the company, and we won, the old culture came right back. It's very hard to really change the way you do business when it's entrenched. If you're doing trigger one, trigger two, and trigger three on a somewhat regular basis, over time you will accomplish trigger four. So what you find in this case, if you're always doing a little continuous improvement, some reorganization, tweaking your mission and vision as you go along, what will happen is over time you will change the way you do business. The other thing to think about is the organization's commitment to continuum in this case is how we do this change. And what you'll notice in this case is at the top, there's two pieces to this. There's the organization and the individual. And the first step, it's high organization, low individual. And what I talk about in this case is, this is where we have to build a case. What's the cause? Why are we doing this? Who's going to be involved? Step two, as we come down in this case, we talk about what's the output? What's the expectation? And once we get those set in the organization, the next thing that starts to happen is, on the right side, it's still a concept, not much reality. You know, we just sort of talk about it. We've got the vision, the mission out there. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to change. Now the individual has to start doing it. So we get some experience. We do some assessments. We understand the needs, the gaps in the process. And then step four, it becomes a reality because now we're doing it. We're building the capability. We're doing development and training in this case. So one thing to think about is as you do this change continuum, there is a high piece that's the organization, and then you've got to translate it over to the individual so that it really goes from a concept to reality. Now, one thing about change, it's wily. It's always watching you, and it always waits for that moment to strike, you know. So it's resistant and it's wily. It likes status quo. It likes where it was. It likes its lair. So always think about it. I always had this cartoon for a long time. I used to have it on my desk. Every morning I'd look at it and say, you're watching me and I'm watching you. And that's a key thing you got to keep in your mind is that, you know, when you walk through the organization, there's a group of people that aren't going to change. And they're watching you all the time. First misstep, you want to go back to the old way. It was better then. So keep thinking about it. It's wily and it's resilient. So I want to talk a little bit about how do we go now from exit one to exit three to exit four, and so forth. And I want to talk a little bit about what are the organizational inhibitors, blocks and barriers in this case, that exist that are preventing you from moving from one of those steps, one of those exits to the next exit. And we have a handout we're going to give you. You already gave it. Very good. The group is faster than me. So in teams, what we want you to do, and the teams in this case is around your phase, is list out five organizational inhibitors that are impacting your organization from moving in the next phase of your QI roadmap. So if you're phase one, what are those inhibitors that are taking you from not getting to phase two to three, and so forth? And for each inhibitor, decide its level of importance and its level of resistance. And try to capture the why, because we want to do a little report out from each group, because we want to capture for those people at phase two how to get to phase three, and those people at phase three how they're getting to phase four. So again, level of importance and the level of resistance. And you'll see importance can be low, it can be minor in this case, medium, it could be significant, or high, it's severe, it's much more than significant. It's really a really important roadblock. And resistance can be low to high. You know, minor, some opposition, or significant opposition. So this is the form that you have. I filled out the first one for you, lack of senior management support. So you can say, you know, it's high importance, and you can have, in this case, high resistance. Why is that the case in your organization? It varies from organization to organization. So list your five out, rate them in the level of importance and the level of resistance, and why, as a group, you think it's that way. And then what you'll find on the back page is there's a quadrant analysis that you can focus on, you know, from resistance and importance. You can look at where do you want to focus it in this case. So this one, senior management support, we had, you know, high resistance, high importance. That'd be a key one to focus on. And it shows you on the other ones that, you know, then we'd want to look at, we want to prioritize those that are high and high. We want to implement those that are low importance, low resistance, high importance. Those are quick to do. And monitor the other ones and question the ones that are really low. So as you go through this as a group, go back, get your five top ones, rate them level of importance, level of resistance, why, and then plot them on that quadrant analysis. So we've got some time to do that. No, try as a group. Yeah, try as a group. I think that'll be better. And again, remember what you want to do is from the phase you're on to the next phase. What is the resistance? What is the importance? What are the blocks and barriers? Okay, what we'd like to do is sort of end the discussion so we have enough time to finish today. What we'd like to do is get a report from each group, the people who were at phase one, just what were the ones you saw as the major obstacles and why, and what you thought you could do to overcome them. So who is in group one, phase one? Oh. So could one of you tell us what you came up with, just quickly?
Some of you had the one, actually, you read it up there.
Leadership?
If it's more denying the cut, it's not working against, it's just things are getting deeper and then walking away from the process. So we gave a medium resistance.
Did you have any others?
The other one was the staff being overwhelmed with what they have to do.
That's the current day-to-day work, yeah.
Resistance. So that's high resistance.
Yeah.
High importance.
Okay. How about phase two? How about phase three? Now there's a whole lot of posters up there.
Staff resistance, there's a lack of trust as they see it as more work being in making an anonymous way to present the ideas that they're seeing the work happens, but they're afraid that if they present that, it'll be a reflection that they're not doing the job by attracting other urgency and conflicts, the perception of the time at home.
So it sounds like we have some commonalities at every phase. How about phase four?
Right. I guess identify a lot of inhibitors, but only rank two of them. The highest rank of importance and resistance for lack of senior management support. I'll just mention one of the ones that didn't think I heard by my hearing, not good. That we can get down to ranking was fear. And fear in particular that this new thing is going to be.
So this is, we got a new one here. We've sort of had the resistance of change, staff resistance, senior management, so now you're talking about rewards and recognition of really moving it forward in that case. Okay. How about phase five?
Well, we had the same similar fear of the staff and with just selfishness, how does this help me? But some of our other ones that we actually got to rank with isolation at QI because he's just one or two people, but that's not my job. Now we have committee formed. No lower about the staff want to be involved because that's a committee, or I'll do something past the committee and then they're not engaged or wanting to be engaged in the process. Another one of ours was that data was not specifically just collecting all the data, you have it all there, but not actually being evaluated and used effectively in the organization.
Okay. Anybody have any other comments you want to add into it? So it's sort of some commonality in this case. Yep.
Organization where working in silos rather than across.
Mm-hmm. So I think what you can see as you move forward is similar problems at each stage, and you just need to overcome them. One of the things to think about is when you're doing this leadership of QI, one thing I've always found is that one of the things you need to do if you're going to be a leader is to really have some chosen thought. As you're thinking every day, what you need to think about is process, what's working, what's not working, do I have the data, how am I going to come out to the organization? And the other thing that I always did was sort of had a conscious speech, easy to say, but all the time talking to people about QI, talk about process, not people. Keep it in the focus, you know, really make people think about it. And then have consistent action if you're a leader. As you're going through the organization, always be talking about the things. Be on a team, lead a team, be a team member. It's a good thing to do. I've done it when I was senior vice president. I was a team member on a lab team. And it's a whole different perspective when you're a member versus a leader or a sponsor in this case. And the other thing you have to do is have constant care. You know, one of the things you have to do is every day you got to get up, a little fertilizer, water, sunlight, keep the thing growing. You know, it needs constant care. It needs nurturing all the time as you go through the organization. So we got some good things up there. And think about these activities. It's a good way to constantly keep going back, thinking about the level of resistance and the level of importance, because if you can reduce the level of resistance, then you can start to make some change. We did that.
Thanks, Jack. I always wish he could talk for about another couple hours because I always learn a lot listening to Jack. I'm going to talk as fast as I can so that we could hopefully have some time for questions. So many of you are from diverse organizations that I wasn't expecting to be here, so I'm pretty excited about that. But state and local health departments, if they desire to be accredited, will have to show their plan for how they intend to move forward with quality improvement. And so we have a quality improvement plan in our department, and I think my favorite part of the plan is the fact that it is a visible sign of management support. Here's the plan, and it sets out and addresses some of the issues that I heard just raised up just now. Each of these slides, I want to credit Ty for putting these slides together, because I used to think I was good at building PowerPoint slides until I got to work with Ty. So the elements of a quality improvement plan are fairly well outlined in the FAB standards, and the first thing is to have definitions for what it means to do the job. And so that sounds really benign, and of course, why would you even need to define the terms? But I can tell you that every single thing that comes up that's just a little bit sandpaper or needs, you know, doesn't feel quite right or is not quite right in our organization, that's a quality improvement project. Not every one of them is. And so it's nice to kind of have a frame for what is and what isn't and have some definitions. And there are many you can beg, borrow, and steal from other organizations. The second is about purpose and having a culture of quality and a desire for a future state of quality in the organization. You know, what is it that builds pride for people to want to come to work there? That we're doing good work, that not only do we do this great mission of improving the health of the public, but the agency I work in does it well, and we're proud of that work. And I want to just back up I want to go to administration. This is the one that I wanted to focus on most. And the definition is that the elements will govern, what's going to govern the structure of the quality improvement plan. And even though I know it's going to be difficult for you to read, I'm just going to pull back up to who's going to be leading your quality improvement team? Because I think this concern that there's this team over there and they're in charge and therefore we don't have to do that work because there's a committee is important. So having those roles defined, we had a battle for like 3 months on roles and responsibilities while we were writing our plan, because I know a lot of organizations use their leadership team to be their quality improvement team, and we had a member of our team and the reason he was a member is he'd done quality improvement in some other organizations, so we wanted to tap into his resources and expertise. He was adamant that this needed to have bottom-up support and that we needed to be very clear, and so our roles and responsibilities descriptions goes on for about 2 pages in our plan, because everybody in our organization has several pieces that are their job that relate to improving quality. So it doesn't matter where you sit in the organization, you have responsibilities related to quality improvement. And that happened not because of any one person's brilliant thought, but because of some really fussy meetings where we worked it out. And that was good. And I love the last bullet that they require is budget and resource allocation. I hope that just means staff time, because we don't have a line item for quality improvement at our department. Thankfully, we had some grant support to bring the training, which brings us to training. And they offer some suggestions that within the standards about what you should be doing, like is it part of your new employee orientation training? Do you have a basic online, is there a resource that they can go to? We have a training that we do. It'll change for next year, but monthly we were providing basic principles and core competencies training. So it was like an hour or two and a half hour training, three hours, where facilitated by various members of our planning team, and people got the basics of quality improvement, PDSA, why they should care, flow charting, Gantt charting, basic cause and effect diagramming, and just basic beginning principles so that everyone would be prepared, and everyone in our agency has participated in, at some level of training. And we continue to work on advanced training with our Q team, participating in webinars that are provided by NACHO and other organizations, or any other kind of resource that we can find. And then I heard some other questions about project identification, and that's deciding what areas you're going to do. You know, how do you decide what projects get picked? And I heard from phase three a concern that if I raise it up, that it's going to be a reflection on me doing my job poorly. So I do think that this is a great opportunity for discussions within organizations about how you pick projects. In our dream world, we'll use our performance plan and select things where we want to improve. So let's say we're not getting the outcomes we want. We're going to work on QI in those areas. But currently, our strategy has been to have staff identify areas where they think that the process can be improved. And we've seen some outstanding outcomes with that related to utilization of curriculum within a Healthy Babies, Healthy Start home visiting program, the way our TB clinic gets their the patients directed to the TB clinic. And I'm interested in how other groups identify projects, because do you all have a strategy? You phase four and five folks, how do you identify projects?
Based on if we don't meet our goals.
Say that again.
Objectives and goals, if we're low, then we're not meeting our goals to choose projects that way.
Gotcha. So you're looking at performance outcomes for the department's strategic plan, and if, you know, if we're not quite there, that's an opportunity for quality improvement. That's very focused, directed work, and that's, I think, a goal for us. Pass off to Ty.
So for those who are preparing for accreditation, you probably recognize the right-hand side of the screen. That's just a snapshot from the FAB Standards and Measures version 1.0. But yeah, I just wanted to mention one thing generally about the QI plan. This group up here, phase one, was talking about their barriers, their inhibitors, and they were talking about, you know, the fact that the director might offer verbal support, say, you know, go forth and do good things, and then walk away. Or the other example, you know, they gave was staff are just too busy or it's not a priority. I think one thing that can take you, and I mentioned this to them, one thing that can take you from that to actually doing some things is a QI plan. Because while your director might say, go forth and do good things and then walk away, if you have a plan in place, that's just a constant reminder. If you have a policy in place that's signed off on by the director on QI, you can always go back to that and say, we do have support, this is a big deal, and here's how we're going to accomplish it. So the next phase of the plan, six, is goals. So what are your goals for QI in the agency? So it's important to list objectives with measures, time frame. You know, one of the things that we did for our first year was to set what I thought were pretty easily achievable goals. So pretty, we didn't set the bar too high. We wanted to experience some success in the first year. And I mentioned before, our goals primarily were related to training staff and doing projects. So next is monitoring. How are you going to keep track of the work that you do related to QI? So while we have goals for staff for QI training and projects, we also need to monitor the plan. How are we doing? How am I doing as the project coordinator? with, you know, training? Are we tracking how many staff have attended trainings? Are we offering relevant trainings? Are we making materials available so staff can do projects, initiate projects, and then follow through and create a storyboard? And how do you keep track of that? Next is communication. So how is QI communicated throughout the agency? How are goals, requirements, critical information communicated? So this section would describe just the regular communication. So does it happen in meetings at the program level? Does it happen at all staff meetings? Do you have a QI newsletter with something like Q-tips that Sonia over here coined a phrase for? Beautiful, beautiful. So, you know, how is it communicated? And then assessment. How are you going to assess the work that you did? And I would say, you know, using the PDSA approach to even working with your QI plan, this is where we are now for our 2011 plan. Assess how we did in 2011. So look at the objectives, look at what we monitored throughout the year, and build on our accomplishments and set new goals that will take us a little bit further. Wanted to mention one more thing about our QI plan. Sonia indicated that there was, you know, one of our Q team members was at the staff level, and he came in with a different perspective. I have to say that I sat down to draft our initial plan, and I was using like the Tacoma, Pierce County, and Spokane plans as a model, and I thought everything was going great, and I wrote this plan up, presented it to the group, and I was thinking, this is awesome. Like, this is the best thing I've ever written as a professional. And so they look at it, and I mean, I was just executed. It was brutal. Like, really? You want to tell staff this? It was the most top-down. I mean, staff would have felt like this, and leadership would have felt like this. It was awful. And so thank goodness for Preston, our Q team member. I would probably be looking for a job if it wasn't for him catching me on that. But it allowed us to create two key themes for our plan. One is that staff have the staff have the bulk of knowledge about programs and processes, so they should initiate projects. They should have a critical role in projects. And then the other key piece is that managers and supervisors, their role is to provide resources and support. So that's what came of that public execution. All right, we have 5 minutes left, period? Okay. So we're just going to run through two quick slides just because they are extremely relevant to the topic of QI, and just wanted to share these with you. So you might be thinking, what's the relationship between QI and performance management? I would caution you that just doing QI, disconnected from your performance management system, from developing standards and measures, reporting, measuring, all those different things, is not a good place to be. And so I wanted to make this resource available to you. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up. This is the Turning Point Performance Management Framework. I don't know that the FAB standards actually say it by name. It does describe a performance management system with those four components: performance standards, measures, reporting of progress, and QI. What we've learned in the last year, from my perspective, is it's kind of seeing the big picture of our QI processes and what do we need to do better for 2012, is better connecting our QI work to our performance management work. So I wish somebody would have been there about 2 years ago to tell me how important that was. And they probably did. I just didn't see it yet. Probably part of the process. But I would just say, you know, download some of the Turning Point tools. Think about how that might relate to your QI processes. And I'm going to let Jack talk about the QI culture assessment.
One of the things we found over time is, you know, what is the ingredients of a good quality culture? And you can rate yourself on a scale of zero, nothing in place in this case, all the way out to, you know, you have full commitment. One would be nothing in place. Six, we have institutionalized. It's sort of like a roadmap here. That's why you changed my scale. It used to be zero. You made it the same as the exit. So it works fine. Good. I looked at these slides like 300 times before I got here, and I didn't even notice it until just now when I said zero, nothing in place. So one, you know, nothing in place. You're going through this all the way out. And a way to look at it is some of the things we talk about is a commitment. And commitment, you want to really look at it in terms of the commitment of the senior management, the commitment of the people in the process. Capability. Capability is what we have in the organization in terms of training, skills. You know, Demi used to talk about we have a willing worker. You know,
are they capable? You know, people might be very willing to do the work, but are they capable? So we want to have them trained so that they're not only a willing worker, but they're a capable worker. Customer focus. Are we focused on our customer and our client? Do we understand what they want and need from our organization? Are we surveying them on a regular basis and checking where they are? Do people feel empowered to make a change at the lowest level in the organization? Do they feel that they have the ability to make a change? As Sonia was talking about, somebody in the clinic may come to Ty and say, you know, I got a problem. I want to see if I can fix it. You know, it's not just simply going out and making change. It's really getting, you know, not really permission either, but checking in. I wanted to start something and do it because it does have impacts in other parts of the organization. When we talk about the thing is like, you know, I was talking about, you know, conscious thought. One of the things you want to think about is process focus all the time. Think about the process. How is it working? Is it working? Do I have data on the process? Do I understand it? Do I have information? Can I share it? The other day I was at a meeting and somebody was talking about things and totally extraneous to QI. But what they came up with was a thing that I was thinking really works pretty well. You know, when we talk about process focus, we bring data. And the person was talking about what we really want to do is bring light, not heat. And I said, you know, that really works for QI chat, you know, because if you're really doing data, and you want to bring light. You want people to see, oh, there's a problem. You don't want to point out, you know, Sonia, you know, this is your problem. What are you going to do to fix it? It's really don't bring heat. Bring light so people can see it, enlightenment in this case. The other thing, as we talked about, is institutionalized. So if you're doing the other five, you'll find over time the institutionalized piece will move out. And one of the things to think of is we've plotted on this sort of like a radar chart. It gives you a chance to see the growth. So over time, you may find you got better commitment, better capability, better customer focus, better empowerment, good process focus, and you see that institutionalized line starting to move out, you know, maybe 3, 4. The others might be getting out and up in the 5s, but the institutionalized piece is the last one that's going to get out there. So the radar chart sort of gives you an idea of what it looks like, and you could overlay on this, what do we want to do for the next year? Maybe on capability where we see we're about a, you know, 1.5, we might want to do to a 2. What is it going to take to do that? So you can help you focus and prioritize as you move forward. So we got a few minutes for questions. Anybody have any questions? Well, we must have done a remarkable job. There we go.
Can we get the slides?
Yes, they are uploaded on APHA, so you will find, I don't know if they have them available yet, but you will be able to get them. Yes, Paul.
I was thinking of a comment from some ancient history, early 1980s, the importance of connecting the QI to performance management. It's something I got charged with doing. We use the name productivity improvements and quality improvements. In New York City, not the health part, the whole city government. Back in the early 80s, it was only about an annual budget, expense budget of 14 million, a billion, not the 30 billion it is now, whatever. And we got it over a couple of years by making that connection. Got the savings and revenue tied to productivity in the budget of over $1 billion a year and building up over several years. And nobody thought we could. The original target was 40 million. It was the strength of that was connecting what we call productivity improvement, or QI, to performance management and integrating it with the budget process. And that worked. It helped the city get out of buying, people may remember the late 1970s, New York almost went bankrupt, got loan guarantees, but restrictions, others, outside monitors, had to approve the budget and see. They badly wanted to get out of that. Got out of that a full year earlier, in part, in large part, because of that connection of QI and performance management.
Sure. We wanted to invite Pooja Verma up from NACHO, let her introduce herself, and then talk about some of the resources that NACHO has.
Hi. Well, first I just wanted to talk about some of the next steps that we have for the Quality Improvement Roadmap. I want to thank particularly Ty and Jack for getting the roadmap. They played a heavy hand in where it is right now. We've been vetting it through some work groups and through sessions like this and feedback that we're getting. We're going to keep continuing to refine it, and eventually it's going to become an online tool. So you'll have not only the characteristics and strategies for transition, but we'll also be linking it to all the available resources out there that can kind of direct you to where you need to be to sort of move through the process. Also, our NACHO website, www.nacho.org/QI, has a lot of different QI resources already, which you can access webinars, templates, case examples from QI efforts from other local health departments. And I also want to, if you're not already subscribed to our Accredit Nation e-newsletter, which we send out periodically with updates related to new resources and news related to accreditation and quality improvement, you can also subscribe to that by emailing accreditprep@nacho.org. And you can also subscribe to that on our website at nacho.org/accreditation. So you know that there are a lot of different resources out there on the NACHO website, as well as PHF and the other partner organizations as well. So, and thank you so much for your feedback today on the roadmap and working on it with us. Thanks.
Okay, so what we want you to do is rev up your engines, get back on the highway, get to that next exit. We thank you for attending today. If you have any other questions, we'll be up for that.